Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And Haley Birdwilt could not be with us this time, but we do have a special guest for this episode. About a decade ago, I was a co-host of another Star Wars podcast, and for most of that time, one of my co-hosts was a man named Justin Bolger. Justin was a writer for a bunch of fan websites at the time, including the one that we wrote for together, TheForce.net. But he eventually went on to bigger and better things, including as a social media and marketing strategist for Lucasfilm, where he ran the Star Wars Twitter account for a while. Now, since then, we haven't really had a chance to collaborate on anything Star Wars, which was a shame, but I'm happy to say that changes today. Justin Bolger, welcome to Hoth Takes.
Thanks, man. It's cool to be here. Been a long time since I've been on a Star Wars podcast.
It's really great to have you, and I thought you were a fantastic guest for this episode because we're talking about something that I've been kind of noodling on for years as we've seen what's happened with the franchise recently, which is basically, does Star Wars need more central planning when it comes to the story, when it comes to the storytelling and the storylines that they're trying to explore? At this point, it's kind of hard to keep track of all the Star Wars projects that have been announced and then quietly abandoned. I'm sure folks remember Simon Kinberg's film trilogy. Maybe you remember the Lando TV show. What about Patty Jenkins' Rogue Squadron movie? Even the projects that are still happening have been delayed to the point of approaching what folks in the industry call development hell. Not quite there, but getting there. Folks might have seen a few months ago the new Jedi Order movie with Rey is on its fourth writer at this point. And as for the projects that make it to the screen, they are all over the place. You've got kitty adventures, you've got gritty explorations of the dark side, and maybe the villains are the good guys the whole time. You've got continuations of animated character stories. You've got whatever the heck you call the Mandalorian at this point. So the question that we're going to talk about is there a better way? Should Star Wars be overseen by one or a handful of people who make all the major decisions about what stories are told? Basically, does Lucasfilm need a kind of a Marvel-style creative czar overseeing the franchise? And then if so, who might be a good fit for that role? So before we get to those questions, we've got to think about the Star Wars that we have today, the franchise as it exists. Grace, maybe we could start with you in terms of, you know, what do you think works well about the way Star Wars stories are told right now? If you had to defend the idea that the franchise is well managed and it is in a good place creatively, what is it about Star Wars that you actually like in terms of the direction of the franchise?
I mean, first of all, you're assuming that I would make that argument, which I'm not sure that I would. That is actually probably not something that I would argue. But I think it's so interesting to compare the Star Wars universe that we have right now with, say, the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the far more turbulent DC Cinematic Universe that we have been seeing lately, that was recently taken over by James Gunn, who, it seems like with this new Superman movie, people are like, DC has righted the ship and now they're going to be doing all these cool TV shows, etc. By the way, Peacemaker is very good. That's not really related. I'm just pulling it out. And then you look at Marvel, which is kind of, I would say, in a creative slump, which is, you know, what happens when you advertise a movie as Endgame in 2019 and then still make movies. And some of their shows have been good, some have been not so good. And then we see Fantastic Four doing well, at least among critics. So I think that's really interesting to compare to Star Wars when you consider what other studios have been doing and kind of trying and failing or succeeding to only varying extents. So you think, does it really work to have a czar? Like, maybe sometimes it does, but I wouldn't say that the track records of Marvel and DC are so universally successful. And I think that ever since we got rid of, you know, this when it comes to the movies, this one unifying vision of George Lucas, like they always played around with the books and then with TV shows in the aughts, but we haven't had a one really unifying vision since George Lucas, and I don't really know if it is a good idea to attempt it. So those are my initial thoughts, but I have more thoughts. I just feel like I should probably take a pause and let other people talk now.
I think Grace is right. You said specifically just a minute ago, you know, maybe sometimes it helps to have somebody and maybe it doesn't. I think that's the answer. You know, Eric, you brought up that it's been 10 years since we've been on a Star Wars podcast together. And when you go back 10 years, what were we all talking about? The Force Awakens. It was finally time for Lucasfilm to show the cinematic continuation of Star Wars. It was going to launch kind of a golden age. I'm sure I said that 5 million times back then of Star Wars, where, you know, we were comparing it to Marvel because Marvel was the benchmark for success at the time. You also said something else about that's what happens when you release a film called Endgame and then go on to create more movies. Though we didn't know it at the time, and I'll speak for myself, what we considered the MCU or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think now in hindsight, seems a lot more a specific story from a specific time told for a specific reason. And because nothing like that had been attempted before, we took the wealth of content in the form of films that all dovetailed together and kind of created a brand new viewing experience to mean that that was not only the new standard, which it was, but the new template or the new format. It was all supposed to be like that going forward. And looking back on things I thought then, and I think the way that the future turned out, I don't necessarily think that it has to be that way. And I think that you can look at a lot of other studios or brands or IPs and see how they've been managed to success, even though they don't keep that super cohesive, this person from film A has an impact on this person from film G in 3 years, and we pull it off in such a cool way that it stuns the audience. I don't even think that it would stun the audience anymore. I think there are parts of us that expect it, and parts of us that don't expect it. When it happens, it's a nice surprise, but when it doesn't, it's not really a deal breaker. And I think when I look at Star Wars and what Star Wars has kind of become over the last 10 years, as they have, you know, announced things and those things haven't materialized, but they've announced other things and continued on with projects that no one ever saw coming, I think it is kind of shaken out in probably the only way it could have. Considering that all of the stories are so varied and across different time periods and involving different characters. And I mean, considering where we were 10 years ago, I'll take it. It's not bad.
Grace, I know you were saying that it's unlikely you would make the argument that the franchise is well run right now or mostly successful. But I do just want to, you know, I want to give you a chance to kind of expand on that. But I'm curious if you think that some of the solutions to the problems we're seeing right now might jeopardize the good things about the franchise, which are that there's so many different, you know, you could argue they're throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks. But another way to look at that is they've given a lot of different kinds of people a lot of different chances to tell different kinds of stories. So if you've got kids, you know, they can watch Skeleton Crew. If you're looking for something edgier, they have The Acolyte. If you want a more traditional mashing the action figures together, you can watch Mandalorian. The formats are varied. Even the genres are varied. So that sort of diversity of opportunity to tell stories, and I'm not talking about the diversity of the storyteller because that's a whole separate question which we've had critiques of in the past, but the diversity of the content, it does seem like that would be hard to pull off if you had to have somebody at the top who was saying, this is what the franchise is going to be over the course of the next 5 or 6 years, because once you try to set that in stone, it's harder to have an opportunity where you say, oh, that filmmaker just put out a great movie. Let's see if they want to do Star Wars, or like that TV show had something really excellent. I wonder if that person would want to produce a Star Wars show, which is where some of this stuff has come from recently. Mm-hmm. So I guess I just wonder how you see that trade-off between flexibility and consistency.
Well, I mean, I would argue that the one of those examples, The Acolyte, yeah, they gave a chance to a filmmaker who wouldn't normally be thought of as someone who would do a Star Wars thing, and then they unceremoniously canceled it before it got good. So I mean, I think that's an example of, yeah, maybe they do give chances, but then they don't invest in them. Like, they'll invest a bajillion dollars in The Mandalorian and Grogu, but not in going out on a limb past a season one of The Acolyte, which I personally find really disappointing. And then also there, as we discussed on this podcast, there were various reasons why Andor didn't have more than two seasons. But I do think, narratively speaking, that was a mistake. So I mean, yes, they're taking chances, but they're not being, I don't think they're being ambitious enough in the chances that they're taking. And I don't think they're being risky enough. I think they're putting money in what makes them money, and not investing in enough in kinds of stories like The Acolyte and Andor. Like, yeah, The Acolyte and Andor got made, but they're, you know, either limited to one or two seasons or are really more of the exception than the rule. If we compare it to Marvel, which has this kind of Kevin Feige SAR figure, like, Marvel has also done some really interesting TV shows that are unlike anything else. But part of the issue is they almost always have to tie it back to a movie or a TV show or do cameos or something like that. But Star Wars TV shows do that too. You almost always have to have some kind of tie-in to remind you that, yes, you are watching a Star Wars thing. So in a sense, I feel like it's already in a pretty similar place to where Marvel and DC are. And I don't know if having a more centralized person sort of guiding the ship would make that better or worse. I do want to hear Justin's thoughts on this. But before that, Eric, remind me, is Dave Filoni, like, what's his role right now?
I forget the exact title, but he definitely has something of a chief creative officer role. I think that might actually be the title, but if it's not exactly that, that's the implication of it. He does have oversight of the storytelling, at least nominally. And actually, you know, I would love to talk a little bit later about, like, is he effectively Kevin Feige, or are there studio politics and dynamics that basically mean that he might seem like a Kevin Feige, but he doesn't actually have that authority inside the organization? That's like another potentially interesting conversation.
Justin, interested to get your take on this.
So much of what you said, I absolutely, like, 100% agree with, Grace. So I'm going to try and, like, go in the gaps to say where I have a slightly different opinion. I think you hit the nail on the head. We're really, at least to me, I think we're talking about brand elasticity. You want your brand, and this is where, like, head and heart kind of come into conflict for me. I can look at this from a business perspective and say Star Wars is a business that is built to achieve something specific. You said it really well. We're in the money that makes the money. But then, you know, for people like us who are deeply in love with the franchise, and the franchise has significance to moments in our life and even our overall identity to a large extent, I think it's like having a favorite child that you expect to do very well, and then having, like, the second child. I'm sorry if either of you two are, but, you know, typically, like, oh, and this is the ruffian, the ne'er-do-well, who I don't expect as much from, but if they get a good job, then I'm gonna be happy. I think we, for so long, had an expanded universe that, once again, to various levels of quality, still told a story that felt like it was all in the same place, and that all of it mattered, depending on how much that was your thing, the thing you agreed with the most. If you were an Imperial fan, it was cool to see, like, the Moff Council and the New Jedi Order. If you were a Jedi fan, maybe it was better for you to go back to the Old Republic and see how Jedi were operating then. But it all felt like if you tugged a little bit at one end, you'd feel it on the other one. And I think that, I don't want to use the word victim, but I think that that is a characteristic of the modified success that Star Wars has had since the Disney acquisition and churning out more pieces of content. And increasingly, just like with the EU, that content has, like I said earlier, different levels of quality. And those different levels of quality are going to resonate with fans in different ways, especially when the core group of fans who were there for the EU, reading the comics, reading the books, playing the video games, and keeping all of these things straight in their head, we had a specific thing that we were used to. And when, you know, the sequel trilogy and the other films and everything else began to materialize, it wasn't exactly what we had in mind in some cases. But I think that really, if you go to the mountaintop and look down at Star Wars from beginning to end, and you look at the transition from print media and video game media to film and television, as we've gotten so much film and television over the last 10 years, we've really ended up with the EU. And I look back at where Star Wars has been, and I remember when books were all we had, and, you know, just a few movies. And I look back at all of it, and I'm like, you know, on some level, it could only have ended up this way. And I'll even look at Marvel right now, which the MCU, I think up through Avengers Endgame, is really tight and executed really well. But I think, as I said earlier, that's more a product in hindsight of that being one story. It was just they told it in a way that almost tricked you into thinking that it wasn't one story and those stories were just related. But I really do think, looking back at how the MCU shook out and how Star Wars shook out, again, it was always going to end up this way, especially because Star Wars is successful when it comes to just making money. I hope I don't sound cynical. I don't think of it cynically. I think of it more
so. You can't get more cynical than I am. Like, I'm the cynic.
Well, thank you. I think what I'm trying to say, just encapsulating, is it depends on what your definition of is in a lot of cases with Star Wars. And I think that that's kind of a blessing right now, going back 10 years again and just thinking about where we came from.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to want to talk, Eric, but I just really, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you really, really quickly, just to sort of affirm something that Justin said there about, you know, it felt like the extended universe was all connected. Like, if you would pull on a thread, it would somehow all come together. And I don't know if it's because we have so many more media than just books, but it feels like it's not the same with the current canon universe, where I don't necessarily feel like the High Republic is connected to New Order kind of situation, except for through cameos. Like, I don't feel like the Acolyte is necessarily connected to the normal Republic, the Low Republic, except that Yoda shows up in the very last episode. So I don't know if it's because there's more media there, just, you know, TV shows and comics and books, or if it's just some like fundamental way that maybe it was all more cohesive in the expanded universe than it is now.
Yes, I agree with you, but I think that that's intentional. I don't think that the effect that you're talking about is intentional, but I think that the potential of what you're talking about is intentional. And what I mean by that is, I think back to all of the Star Wars books on my shelf, everything from like Darth Bane, which deals with the Sith and more the Force and mysticism, to Hard Republic. Old Republic books are, I'm sorry, I can't talk right now. I'm talking more so about, like, oh my gosh, the Republic Commandos. Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't remember that. But Republic Commandos, like military fiction, and you go from that to some of the bigger mythology building things. I think the medium being less expensive to produce means that that medium was always geared or really designed and set up to be able to take some of those chances that you're talking about, Grace. And I think that's a really astute observation, because while I don't think that because of the budget and the money involved, you can take those big swings as much with filmed content, it seems that when Star Wars has taken those big swings, and I mean, not so much the Acolyte, which I think was tonally not 100% aligned with the big swings I'm talking about. But I mean things like Andor Season 2, which everyone is fawning over. I think about things like Rogue One. When they, hey, let's just tell a little story about something that relieved of that kind of pressure, the space opens up to be yourself, but just be yourself in Star Wars. And if it's authentically produced and written, then those are the things that seem to have been the most successful over the past few years.
And I would even point to Skeleton Crew as an example of that, and maybe a template for the future in terms of letting somebody who has a who was inspired by a very particular kind of story in their childhood and sees the opportunity to tell that story in Star Wars and has a clear plan to do that in a way where they are not burdened by the need for cameos. And I think this connects to a point that we were talking about earlier with the Marvel TV shows, where they always kind of have to tie back to the movies, because at the end of the day, they're sort of marketing material for the big budget Hollywood releases. And Star Wars, I think, has, I don't know if it was intentional that they didn't want to do TV shows that played that role for the movies, or if it was just the TV ideas that came to them weren't connected to the movies. But Star Wars doesn't have that. There's more shows that are not connected to the movies than there are shows that are connected to the movies. Now, part of that is just there haven't been a lot of movies, and there isn't a regular movie release schedule, so it's not as if there's that constant drumbeat of movies, and we have to decide, do we want the TV to connect to it or not? That's kind of the Marvel thought process. Star Wars, whether intentionally or otherwise, doesn't have that thought process because there isn't a standard movie cadence, and movies are not driving the franchise right now. Maybe behind the scenes they are, but in public they're not. And so I think it's interesting to think about, like, can you find more success in a Star Wars environment because you don't feel the need to use the TV shows the way that Marvel uses its TV shows? On the other hand, in between movies, fans who don't want to read a book to find out what's going on in the franchise can benefit from being able to turn on a TV show and see, you know, the Marvel example is kind of like the atmosphere of, you know, New York City or whatever in between, you know, Avengers team-ups. Like, what is the world like right now in the aftermath of the last movie as we gear up for the next movie? What's happening in the world? What are the characters doing? And yes, sometimes it's cheesy cameos that show you the connectivity, but other times it's more vibes. In a way that's actually fun to watch. And I think Star Wars is really missing that. And I think that given the problems they've had with the movies, some big picture planning, the kind that we're, you know, debating here is, do we need this in Star Wars? Do we not need this? I think one area where it could be a real benefit is laying out, okay, we're going to do these three TV shows over the next 5 years, and they're going to serve this big picture purpose for our franchise. They're going to have writers and directors who have their own thoughts about how to do this, but on a meta level, we need them to drive us toward this goal. You know, for all the criticisms that we've had on this show of The Mandalorian recently, and the idea of just giving Dave Filoni carte blanche to do whatever movie he wants, I think that we may be, to some degree, impressed and appreciative of how they connect the TV show to the movie, and we don't see a lot of that in Star Wars. In fact, I don't know that we've ever had a kind of TV show handoff to a movie the way that we're probably about to have with The Mandalorian and Ahsoka handing off to the Dave Filoni movie. And I think there's going to be some element of the fandom that's like, gosh, I've criticized Dave Filoni. The Mandalorian season 3 wasn't that great, but this feels cool. This connectivity feels cool. And Marvel has gotten a lot of mileage out of that kind of connectivity. And I think there's an argument to be made that Star Wars is really missing that.
Something I do wonder about is, you know, we talk a lot about superhero movie fatigue and Star Wars fatigue. And I think, to a degree, it's a bit overstated, because, you know, superhero movies are generally going to make a lot of money. Star Wars movies are too, but not always. And with Star Wars, you could see something that's critically loved, like Andor, but not necessarily viewed to the same degree. By the way, I am someone who's not fawning over season 2 of Andor. I thought it was fine, but nothing compared to the first season. But that's a different conversation. But like for myself, I am such a Star Wars fan, obviously. It has meant so much to me. It means so much to me. I truly love it when it's great. I do think Skeleton Crew is a really cool example of what Star Wars can do when it does that kind of thing that you, Eric, were just talking about sort of the let's check in on vibes. And Skeleton Crew is actually really wonderful and really entertaining and just a total success of that principle. But honestly, as someone who loves Star Wars, I've been feeling, if not fatigue, then certainly a lot of skepticism, even so far as cynicism about the future of Star Wars. And like, even if Dave Filoni does a really good job connecting the Mandalorian show and the Ahsoka show to Mandalorian and Grogu, I didn't really like season 2 or season 3 of The Mandalorian. I didn't really like Ahsoka. So will I really care if the movie connects well to those shows? Will I even see the movie and when it's in theaters? I mean, probably, let's be real. But I'll be very ambivalent about it in a way that I would never expect for seeing a Star Wars movie. And I do wonder, you know, if that's how I, a Star Wars fan, am feeling, what about all those people who don't want to watch the TV shows before they watch a movie, or who feel like they are just over inundated with Star Wars or Marvel or DC or whatever content lately, and will go see the occasional movie, but what if it doesn't connect with them, if they haven't seen all of the content that they need to see? So again, I think fatigue is maybe the wrong word. I think that's maybe overstated, but I think it's worth considering about what if people just are kind of tired with the glut of content and don't want to watch it all.
It's interesting. One of the reasons I'm really happy to be having this conversation is because I think it is so much more complicated than we probably even have time to completely unpack. There are so many different degrees that you can approach it from, and one of the ones I do want to bring up, I have two in mind right now. One, I said in some ways it feels like we were always going to end up here. I don't think enough people really, when criticizing Star Wars television, right, regardless of whether or not you're coming from a more emotional standpoint, technical standpoint, whatever, I think we tend to overlook kind of the alternate universe where Lucas retains control of Lucasfilm and maybe goes through with producing Star Wars Underworld. Regardless of any problem that somebody might have with the shows that we're getting, even looking at Underworld's concept as it's been reported in the press, that show was going to depart from some of the more traditional Star Wars trappings that we had seen before, try to flip the script on how we thought about certain characters and really how we viewed the galaxy far, far away anyway. And when you think of something like that, you think about the fact that Underworld would have eventually run into streaming issues one way or another, whether it's we're going to put this out on a network or we're going to make a partnership with like Netflix or another future streaming service that had not materialized at the time. You kind of start to see how you're never going to please everyone, even if Lucas had control over it. Like, look back at the prequels. It's interesting to me to see that all roads kind of lead to a place where technology makes it so much easier to produce new Star Wars content. And then even looking back at the history of Lucasfilm and George Lucas, technology was a driving factor in whether or not he sometimes felt motivated to make new content. And I just see that, yeah, eventually we'd be talking, is Star Wars Underworld not really Star Wars enough? Well, that 10 episode Netflix season, it just feels like, again, we were always going to get here. The other thing is, I mentioned it a second ago, kind of just the evolution of media, how it's consumed, where technology converges in it, and what that means for the content we do currently get. Even looking back, going back 10 years ago, it wasn't the same kind of world. And if you look at the audiences that grow up at certain times, getting used to the world and how media is consumed, and then eventually setting the standard for how media is consumed and drawing the attention of corporations that want to advertise to certain groups, in some ways, we aren't necessarily aging out of Star Wars, but we're aging out of the target demo for Star Wars in a lot of cases. And I think that a lot of the loudest voices in the room are having difficulty ceding ground to the newer voices. I'm not saying anyone is right or wrong, but that conflict, for lack of a better word, has been really interesting to watch over the years. Who criticizes, why they criticize, and then if you look at the habits or the opinions that they're talking about, wondering how much of what their media habits have been throughout their entire lives, how much that's actually influencing what those opinions are.
So I'm going to say something that's going to sound like very nerd bro of me, But sometimes I miss how Star Wars was like when I was a little kid, which it sounds like such a Reddit comment, like such like r/ Star Wars. Star Wars was better when I was a kid. But what I mean by that was, you know, when I was 10, there were six movies. Yeah, Revenge of the Sith would have been out. So there were six movies. And then I discovered there's this beautiful thing known as the expanded universe. So if I wanted to, which I did occasionally, I could read up on characters I liked or eras I liked and get more information. But I only had to worry about the six movies. And I also felt like it was easier to discard the things that I didn't like that existed in the expanded universe. I really liked Leia and Han's kids, especially Jason and Jaina, but I never really cared at all about Luke's kids. And in my mind, I was like, well, that's just not canon. That didn't happen to me. And I was able to say that because it was just in books. It wasn't like in movies that everyone had seen. The vast majority of people, even those who really love Star Wars, hadn't read these books and therefore weren't like, no, but that's canon. And sometimes I just miss that era of having fewer things and having it exist more in my imagination. And I mean, I think that Andor is one of the most brilliant shows ever, not just for Star Wars. I think it's a truly wonderful show, especially season one. But would I prefer, even considering all the good things that came from the Disney acquisition, sometimes I think, would I prefer if it was just six movies, a bunch of books in my imagination? And sometimes the answer is yes, not always, but sometimes I do miss that era of it being more contained in a way, even though obviously the EU was huge and had all of these stories, but it was like it existed far more. I had far more leeway to imagine what I wanted to see from it rather than having it very conscribed.
And it gave your imagination way more space to play around with without a visual image or something audio saying you're wrong for thinking that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You said something a minute ago that I thought was really interesting. You talked about it was fewer things then. And that kind of, to me, reflects the point that I was making about like how media consumption habits are really influencing the kind of media that gets produced and even the format. Fewer things then, it was okay because you didn't have as many things vying for your attention. And as we have more things now, all of the things that want you to pay attention to them have to really produce just more things, more things, more things, because the speed of the world will put those things into obscurity if it's just fewer. It's like if there is this shadow or not as well-known IP that you like, and when you find, you know, like an eraser someplace or a book about it, you get really excited because you've never seen that small fandom of yours represented out in the world. And that used to be how all fandom was run, I think, before. But now, if you don't have 5 million social media accounts, a show on streaming, or some kind of daily reminder that this is a thing that exists and that you should pay attention to it, it's probably not going to be successful. And I think, listening to your words, that made me think of what Star Wars is, was, and, you know, will, I guess, continue to be or change to fit around depending on what happens.
It does make me think of how, even though Star Wars has always kind of been the titan of the franchise world, it felt a little bit more like a small community, like a relaxing community pre-Disney acquisition, because there was less pressure to make, you know, capital C content. I mean, it really was, you had the movies, they were done. You had a couple TV shows, but in some ways, the fact that they were animated almost helped you kind of think of them as, well, if I really like them, then that's great. But this is like kind of the edgy, like super nerdy stuff, like under the table that like only us true nerds talk about, as opposed to like Mandalorian being water cooler conversation. And then
or children watching Disney XD.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, the franchise, while it was never small and quiet, had a little bit more of a hometown feel. And now it's sort of like the gates have been thrown open.
I think that's, I mean, even in some ways, just you and I, Eric, have talked about like the change in visuals and how, you know, in the original trilogy, there's a griminess that is very much lost than when you see the prequel trilogy, and then I would argue really lost for
obliterated
the most part, like totally obliterated in the Disney era. And you know, I would never say that the Star Wars of yore was perfect or that it was beyond reproach, because I love to criticize the thing that I love, but maybe
that means you love it.
Exactly. But, you know, Justin, talking about all of these different ways that we consume things, you know, just in general, that's one of my pet peeves, where you'll watch a really fun new show on Netflix, and unless it gets 17 billion views in the first 3 hours, it's going to immediately get canceled, no matter how critically acclaimed it is, or even really how many views it gets over a longer period of time. And I think the incentives now are so skewed. And maybe the issue, my overarching issue, isn't just a nostalgia for how I experienced Star Wars as a child, but how I experienced media as a whole as a child, and sort of the fragmentation that we have seen over the past 20, 30 years with the rise of cable and then the rise of social media and just all different kinds of streaming services you can have and the different kinds of shows there can be. And in some ways, it's a moot point because we can never go back to that era of there just being fewer ways to consume. This is how life is now. But I think maybe, at least for me, I'm having this revelation here in real time. Maybe part of my fatigue with Star Wars writ large lately is just a symptom of my larger fatigue with just the way that media is produced and the incentives that exist and the way that shows and movies conform to business incentives. And Star Wars to me is just a manifestation of those frustrations, because I'm seeing all of those frustrations sort of play out in this franchise that I really love. So, wow, I'm just having a philosophical revelation here.
I will say, though, I think the good news about that, because I get it. I'm the same way. I was a library rat. I used to love to go around in libraries and find like old pieces of quote unquote now content that I wasn't aware of, especially if it had to do with Star Wars, books that I hadn't heard of, different magazine articles, different newspaper articles sometimes. But I think that what's good about all of this is that in a lot of different ways, it simply underpins that Star Wars is relevant beyond our love for it, and it's lucrative and still intriguing to the point that the current world and all of the changes that we're talking about, all of the differences in media consumption, while they may have affected the shape of the content, they haven't affected the fact that the content is still relevant enough to still be talked about. And I find a lot of encouragement in that, you know, like in a lot of ways, we've been here before. Somebody, I can't remember who, but mentioned how it was after Return of the Jedi. You have a couple of Ewok movies that are kind of weird, and droids, and the Ewoks cartoon series, and, you know, then the EU begins. So I think that in a lot of ways, what is happening has happened to Star Wars is, as we're saying, just indicative of the shift that we're going through right now. And not every brand or IP or story has been able to make that change without going away. And here Star Wars is arguably, I think, maybe even more relevant than ever. And I think also, as weird as this might sound, in some ways, because we don't agree on it in quite the same way that we used to before. Everyone has an opinion. I genuinely believe that those opinions are relevant, especially if people can back them up with relevant thought. I think that's where a lot of the fandom magic happens. But I think that, you know, you got to be careful about how the world chooses to talk about your fandom and how you and your fellow fans fan. And I think that that might also be part of the feeling we can sometimes get around Star Wars not, quote unquote, being what it was, and then wondering whether or not, that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I will say, as a Star Wars fan, and proudly so, we have one of the worst fandoms. And maybe that's part of it, is just because it's so massive. But, you know, there's a reason Star Wars fandom gets a bad rap. And I think, you know, obviously there are so many parts of it that are open and welcoming and wonderful, just like much of the message of Star Wars is. But there is also, I feel like, a toxicity that has been exacerbated further by the rise of social media and by this fragmentation that has allowed a very vocal minority, and it is a true minority, but a very loud minority, to have a lot more influence than they should.
Yeah, I'll agree with what you said about the minority and the majority. I will also say, though, I'm not just trying to paint silver linings on everything, but that's part of what I mean. The relevancy of Star Wars to the world, right? Like, if there is a minority that's that loud yelling about how they don't like Star Wars and causing the conversation to be characterized by the media at large, right? Like, kind of looking in on a niche community and then characterizing that as toxicity and people coming in and doing all of these things. Yes, absolutely. All of this stuff happens. Like, I know, believe me, I know very well, I'd say more than most people, like, the truth of all of that. But at the same time, they don't pick on you sometimes unless they're jealous of what you have. And I know that's kind of a backwards way of saying, oh, it's okay. And I don't mean it in that way. But, you know, I'm glad that it still stirs up that kind of passion, because the second it doesn't, to your point about something not hitting a billion views or getting enough attention to really turn a profit or lead to a good result for the investors who are producing the content, that's when the content goes away. So as sithy as it sounds, I'm just glad that Star Wars is relevant enough to still be talked about as passionately as people still talk about Star Wars.
Well, one of the things that the leadership needs to do in that environment, though, is to have a clear plan and to not be kind of knocked off of it by, you know, a huge backlash that is clearly bad faith. And I think, you know, we've talked before on the show about how the disappointing response to The Acolyte is symptomatic of a company that doesn't have a clear 30,000-foot game plan. And when you don't know exactly where you want to go at a high level, you're more susceptible to the kind of momentary, you know, turbulence, the kind of vicissitudes of, like, you know, if fans get mad about this, you know what, we got to pull back from that. We can't do stuff like that again. Like, not saying they had a plan to do more of it and they stopped, but season two could have been in the cards and now it's not. And I think part of that is because it feels a lot like the people in charge of this franchise are just kind of blundering from idea to idea. And some of them hit, like Skeleton Crew, but it doesn't feel like there's a game plan. It doesn't feel like there's an unshakable conviction at the top that we want to tell this kind of story, this big picture storyline, you know, like the Avengers, the first phase of the story, you know, about the gems or whatever, like whatever that's called. We want to have like a version of that where we tell a big story that we're going to have these little tendrils in different places. We're going to have different pieces of it come together. That it doesn't have to be what you do as a franchise, but like, I don't think anything approaching that is in the minds of Lucasfilm right now. I think it's just like, we're a content factory. We're going to throw ideas at the wall and see what sticks. And as I said, some of them are very good, But there's no sense that this is coming from a shared conviction that Star Wars needs to drive toward a certain story, that there needs to be a thread connecting everything. And I think it's really valuable to have that, because if you don't have that, you see the leadership and the decision-making that we see right now, which is very much like afraid of your own shadow. If the fans don't like something, cancel it and don't try it again. And I just don't get the sense that that kind of decision-making happens in a world where you have that 30,000-foot plan in place and you are just going to drive ahead with it no matter what.
100%. I also do, though, think that, that view is in some ways increasingly a relic of the past. You made the point about, like, there not being that one game plan. And I have to ask, is there any place that you would think or you would consider having such a game plan right now? Like 10 years ago, right? Everyone here would be like, Marvel, they're killing it. Did you see Ant-Man? They did this and it's building. But today, who can you really say has that kind of view?
I don't think anyone does, but I think that the value of it has been proven and it's time for Star Wars to be the next one that does it.
So 100% can get with your opinion, but that's where I'm like, well, we can criticize Lucasfilm, but if they're running the business as all other IP brand story-driven businesses are being run right now, even if we want more of that continuity, like, it's weird to say they're not the only ones, but even Marvel, let's point at them, right? Like, She-Hulk is easily or could easily be considered the Acolyte version for Marvel. I liked She-Hulk. I thought it was a great series. I don't know what the plan was, but I'm getting to the point, at least personally, where I don't always need there to be that kind of overarching plan. And if I get really good content, I'm getting to a place that I can go back to what you were talking about, Grace, where I can take that one. I'm like, this is a really good story. It was solid. It made me feel Star Wars the way I wanted to. And then the other ones, I'm like, that one's not for me. And then I can continue to move on. I really do think a lot of it is adjustment. But because, again, Star Wars is the favorite, there's a lot that we expect from it, because there was a feeling that we got from Star Wars for so long that hasn't quite survived the jump from, I guess, more, I don't want to say legacy media, but print and video games that are loosely connected but very connected at the same time to what we're seeing on screens now.
And I think that actually feeds into an earlier point we've talked about of, you know, I also enjoyed She-Hulk, and that's just an example of a show that similarly did not get a chance. And mm-hmm. I think that's a casualty of sort of a mix of what the two of you have been saying, like a casualty of it being so relevant that the business, the people in charge of Star Wars as a business, want to keep making that money, but at the same time, so cautious that they're afraid of suddenly being not relevant. So I think mm-hmm. the relevance is a double-edged sword. There are great things that come with it, like good storytelling opportunities. But then if they're approaching it with so much fear, then that means there are a lot of missed opportunities or a lot of chances that then, you know, don't have the just the opportunity to be better. Like in the era of network TV, you could say the first three seasons of this show are crappy, but God, once you get to season four, it's great. And you could never do that in the streaming era. Like, who knows, maybe the second season of The Acolyte would have gelled, or even the third, but we'll never know because it got, what, eight episodes less in for one season. And I think that is the casualty of relevance in the current era, where yes, it's good that it's still, that we're still talking about it and that there's still these opportunities for creation, but if you approach it with fear, then that a lot falls by the wayside. And I don't know how to fix that. I don't know if a creatives are who actually did a good job and had a vision that was able to be executed. I don't know if that would fix it, but maybe it would help. I also don't know if it would hurt. So it's just like a potential way to address some of these flaws we've been talking about.
I hear you say that, and I think there's no way Star Trek The Next Generation would have continued on if they had just gotten that one season in today's climate.
Exactly.
Yeah. I do want to say one thing. We keep saying fear, and I'm not going to put words in anyone's mouth, but let me try and give you a different way of thinking about it. When I think about just, I'm a business robot and I want to make money and I want to make money with Star Wars, I think of it less as fear and I think of it more as calculation. The degree to which the calculation takes place, I'm not going to debate whether or not it's too calculated and that leads to the kinds of creative mistakes that we're talking about. I think that there's a strong case to be made for that. And I like giving shows room to breathe. And again, every nerd, every hardcore nerd has cancellation stories that we still think about. Shout out to NBC's Kings. I don't care if it's over 15 years later. I still want that show to come back.
No, you're so right about that. Shout out to Kings. Shout out to Sebastian Stan in Kings.
Yes, and Ian McShane.
Ian McShane.
Even if you have a creative czar, right, they're still subject to that calculation. And I think that might be another point I'm trying to make, but I haven't yet, is that, yeah, having somebody controlling the story or holding it all in their head and directing a team to really reach that vision together collaboratively in ways that excite an audience and hopefully are financially successful at the same time is great. But it's always going to come down to who is making those calculations, how much risk are they willing to take in those calculations. And no matter who is writing a show, is running a show, is directing or whatever, until I think the business of art changes, there's always going to be somebody holding those purse strings. And I think that causes creatives, or should cause creatives, to get really strategic about how they tell their stories, maybe even where and when they tell their stories. It's horrible. I don't like that it's that way. And I miss the kinds of, like I said earlier, swing for the fences that you got from the EU, because you would glom onto this whole undiscovered corner of Star Wars for months to years. But, you know, again, just today, it's a weird world, y'all.
So as we kind of wrap up here, you know, I think it's safe to say none of us are really sure whether having like a Kevin Feige in Star Wars would, quote unquote, make Star Wars better. But I am curious if you want to predict what you think we're going to see with the franchise under Dave Filoni as the creative lead at Lucasfilm now. You know, Justin, I think the last time you and I were on a Star Wars podcast together, Dave Filoni could do no wrong. And people were just salivating at the idea of another season of Clone Wars. I think that was like after the Netflix season, but before that next final season that they did. Mm-hmm. And now his work has multiplied and has also gotten more controversial. I'd love to hear what you think of him in this almost Kevin Feige role, not technically because he's not the president of the company, but like he seems to be the one that they think can guide the franchise, in part, I think, because he did study at the foot of George Lucas. Is he the right man for the moment?
That is so way above my pay grade that I'm not going to answer that question. But I will say,
boo.
Dark Knight, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. So if I am going to answer that question, it's going to center far less on Dave Filoni, and I'm going to go right back to what I said about George Lucas and Underworld. We were always going to end up here, folks. You cannot be the media darling of any fan group forever. When it hits, and that feeling is new. It's like falling in love with somebody for the first time. They can do no wrong. You see everything great about them. The flaws are not as there, or if they are, you don't ignore them because the hit you're getting from the other emotions just overwhelms it completely. Whether it's George Lucas, whether it's Jon Favreau, whether it's Dave Filoni, whether it's Eric Geller, it doesn't matter. That initial success.
And I'm always saying that about Eric Geller.
the initial success is great, but you know, humans gonna human, and as time goes on, your humanity is going to assert itself. You're going to look for something else. You're going to blame, fairly or unfairly, the perception that you have on someone. And that's where heroes and villains, oftentimes when we're talking about creatives and media, come from. You know, like, I'm not trying to dodge the question. I'm saying it's, understand how I mean this, and I hope I'm not sounding rude. The question's almost immaterial, because it really doesn't matter that it's Filoni or anyone else. Like, that is such a tight rope to walk that is largely based on moods and attitudes changing, and even, I think, a lot on zeitgeist. It's like weather patterns. You don't know when they're going to form, you don't know how long they're going to stay, but you know they're going to form. And while I'll say this, I think that a story czar, again, for lack of a better term, is a great thing, but as I get older, I am beginning to think that a story czar is only as effective as the project they're working on. And I don't really know if I need every single project to line up as one long book in the way that I used to want it to. I'm just very excited to get stories that don't contradict what I know about the setting, the saga, everything else that's happening, and stories that are good at it.
Grace, are you still as big a fan of me as you were in my early seasons, or has the luster faded?
Yeah, the luster has really faded, I gotta say. No, I actually totally agree with you on Dave Filoni. As someone who was a total Dave Filoni stan and is now I wouldn't say skeptic, that's a bit harsh, but it's like, you know, every creator has flaws, and I feel like when I was just such a huge fan of him for only his animated stuff, it was a lot harder to see some of those flaws. I mean, not that Clone Wars and Rebels aren't flawed, but like once I was seeing The Mandalorian and Ahsoka, it's more like I was seeing patterns in the way that he tells stories that had always been there, but that I hadn't put them together because, you know, he had just had fewer stuff out and they were animated and that's a different medium. But I could see flaws in Mando and Ahsoka that was like, oh, those are present in Clone Wars too. I just didn't notice them as much. So I do think is an absolutely thankless job, and I certainly wouldn't want it, the one that Dave Filoni currently has. But I'm not unsympathetic to him at all. But I'm also, you know, not unsympathetic to critics. I think that the way you put it, die a hero, live long enough, see yourself become a villain, that is the way to put it for that particular role.
A great analogy, I think, here is Battlestar Galactica, my favorite show of all time. I love all of it, seasons 1 through 4, but there is a large segment of the fandom that absolutely cannot with that show at a certain point between either 2 and 3 or in the middle of 3 and 4. It really does just depend on what your tastes are and who you're going to blame or credit for that success. I think Ronald D. Moore, that showrunner, was looked upon as a god for the first 2 years. And then a writer's strike happened, they came back, and a lot of people weren't really feeling it as much and talk about how they didn't stick the landing, how this was wrong, how that was wrong. It really is just changing tastes, and that will never change.
Listen, I am a defender. I mean, I also love all of Battlestar Galactica, but I love the Lost series finale, and I think it's great. And so do you know the battles that I have fought, yep, similar to you on the Battlestar Galactica front? Just we've been in the trenches there.
Why were they in the church?
Don't even get me started. Then we'll be here another hour.
All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there. Justin, thank you so much for coming on Hot Takes. This was really fun. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too. It was nice to meet you as well, Grace.
All right, and if you want to follow Justin on social media, you can find him on Blue Sky, Justin Bolger. And thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you want to share your thoughts about the show or perhaps suggest topics for future episodes, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on X and Blue Sky. We've got links in in the show notes to our social media profiles. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music, although for legal purposes, we should note that all Star Wars music and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and Spotify. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.